Never look at your city, town, or its people the same way ever again. Stained by Blood, a murder investigation based upon a true story by private investigator Douglas J. Hagman. Using the character Mark Stiles, Hagman takes you on a journey behind the scenes where the homicide becomes a secondary to an underworld of satanic ritual abuse, child abduction, and even mind-controlled experimentation. A world dismissed as conspiracy by those who want to keep its secrets hidden. Exposing the dangers, denials, and deceptions. For 5 years, a brutal killer remained on the loose, free to kill again. As Mark struggles to navigate the maze of bizarre twists and untangle a web of deeply hidden secrets kept by some of the most powerful and influential people in his community and beyond. You may never look at your city, town, or its people the same way ever again. Stained by Blood. Order your copy of this engaging novel today at HagmanandHagman.com and click on the link. Stained by Blood.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two of this Thursday edition of the Hagman and Hagman Report. We are joined by author, speaker, radio show host, and friend of the show, Mr. Bill Salas. His website is prophecydepotministries.net. That's prophecydepotministries.net. We're going to get right back to him, but we're going to talk about Whole Tones first. Tonight's broadcast is brought to you by WholeTonesLive.com. That's WholeTonesLive.com. Are you sick of being stressed, overwhelmed, and unmotivated? Do you feel like life is running you instead of you running your life? You are not alone. Finally, you can experience the scientifically proven powers of music therapy with Whole Tones, a collection of proven music therapy that can help reduce stress, ease your mind, and motivate you. You can get started today and listen to a free sample of this amazing music that heals and inspires at WholeTonesLive.com. One of many happy Whole Tones clients said, "I started playing Whole Tones throughout my workday. Not only was I more creative and motivated, the work I was doing seemed easier and clearer." We've had Michael Terrell on our show, and he has explained how the music was inspired by the music frequencies of King David. Go to the website and download a free sample at WholeTonesLive.com. That's Whole Tones, WholeTones, live.com. Support the Hagman and Hagman Show and go to WholeTonesLive.com. That's WholeTonesLive.com. Again, Michael Terrell has been a guest on our show on numerous occasions, and he's explained the frequencies of King David, and we've had many listeners who have used the product, listened to the music, and have sent just tremendous feedback on how it has not only healed their mind, it has healed some physical ailments, how it has just made things more relaxing and easier. And we thank Michael Terrell for being a sponsor of our show here at the Hagman and Hagman Report. Back to our guest tonight, Mr. Bill Salas. His website, again, prophecydepotministries.net. I urge everybody to bookmark this website because there is all kinds of great content on here. You can check out Bill's radio show. You can check out a lot of the latest news articles and media interviews. One of the ones I really enjoyed that I watched yesterday on his latest book, The Now Prophecies, is under the latest articles and media interviews, right down just below the top of his page. The Now Prophecies, number one bestseller in Prophecy Watchers history. You click on that link, you can watch a three-part video of an interview that Gary Stearman did with Bill on his latest book, The Now Prophecies. And it was a fantastic interview, and I really enjoyed watching it. Bill, welcome back to the show. I'm going to turn it over to you, and let's get going here in hour number two. And we're talking about the Now Prophecies.
Yes, and for the viewers that, excuse me, the listeners that just tuned in, the Now Prophecies are the prophetic events that the Lord predicted centuries ago that at this point in time could happen at any given moment, at the present time, which in essence is what now means, at the present time. These are events that lack significant conditions. There are minor or no conditions that stand between them and their fulfillment. And therefore, they become very relevant to us today. So we talked about those, and we talked about where we're at on the timeline between the rebirth of the nation of Israel 68 years ago and the rapidly approaching prophecy of Ezekiel 38, where the Lord will let the world know that he's the one true God of the Bible. We're rapidly approaching that, but there are events that seem to happen between now and then. And so what are those events? And so we're going to kind of look at those in the second hour, one by one, with some specificity. Of course, the book and the DVD that goes with it, the Now Prophecies, is all the research and all the preparation and all the explanation, so we can only do so much in the radio time allotted. The first one to talk about is in the sequential order of how I think these things will unfold, these ancient predictions that had not found fulfillment, that will someday find fulfillment because Bible prophecies were not supposed to remain on the parchments that they were written on indefinitely. They will someday roll off the parchment and they will hit the pavement with a bang. And I think that's about to happen in some of these instances. And so Iran. Iran is in the news. Is Iran in the Bible? Well, the answer to that is yes and yes. It is in the Bible in two different places, the future of Iran. One of them we talked about in Ezekiel 38 in the first hour. Iran is part of the Ezekiel 38 coalition that comes to invade Israel for plunder and booty in this major prophecy. But they have a double jeopardy, a dual prophecy in the end times that has been vastly overlooked. And I write about it extensively in my book called Nuclear Showdown in Iran, Revealing the Ancient Prophecy of Elam, E-L-A-M. Now, Elam is in Iran. Ancient Elam is in Iran today. It's that area that hugs the Persian Gulf. It's where the Bashar nuclear reactor is. So when you look at a modern-day map of Iran, it is comprised of ancient Persia, which is about four-fifths of Iran today, and Elam, which would be about the other fifth. Now, this prophecy written by Jeremiah around 596 BC, I believe, is dealing with Iran's nuclear scenario. I think the details are pretty specific and point in that direction. And I believe, therefore, this is a prophecy for our time. And basically, I'm going to give you a summary of the prophecy. These six verses, they're pretty self-explanatory, so I invite you to read them in your Bible, Jeremiah 49, verses 34 through 39. Basically, what is being said in this prophecy is Jeremiah said there's going to come a time when the Lord is going to be furious with Iran. He's going to be furious with Iran, ancient Elam, because they've got bad leadership. And we know this because the prophecy says the Lord is going to destroy the kings and the princes from that area. And the Lord would not destroy good leadership. This is bad leadership. Presently, Iran has bad leadership that needs to be destroyed. There's no way around it. They are repressing their people, and they want to spread their Islamic hegemony throughout the world. Especially, they're already doing it throughout the Middle East. They're working with intercontinental ballistic missiles, trying to develop them, which have one thing in purpose in mind, and that is to carry a nuclear warhead or weapons of mass destruction in their warhead. And they were working on a nuclear program and are rapidly approaching the ability to have a nuclear bomb if they don't already have one. Now, Israel's extremely concerned about this. But why is the Lord furious with this leadership in this prophecy? Because the prophecy tells us that they want to launch something lethal somewhere. And so the Lord will prevent that from happening. It says he will break the bow of Elam at the foremost of their might. He will prevent them from launching whatever they want to launch, wherever they want to launch it. And in my estimation, that could be dealing with them wanting to wipe Israel off the map and launch a nuclear weapon and the ability to do that. Then the next verse goes on to say that when this happens, it'll be a disaster as the bow is broken at the foremost of Elam's might, that there's a humanitarian crisis of sorts. It says that the indigenous population will be scattered throughout all the nations of the world. There'll be a refugee crisis that results from this, and it gives the impression that they have to flee immediately. So that, again, would hint of nuclear ramifications. And like I said at the beginning of talking of this prophecy, this is where the Bashar nuclear reactor is. This is a nuclear disaster waiting to happen. It sits on three tectonic plates. Iran is very seismic. It's right on the corner of the Persian Gulf, right there where the waters meet with Iran. And it is built by, started to be built by German parts, but then when the Shah was kicked out and the Islamic Revolution came in 1979, they picked it up again in 1990 with Russian parts, Iranian parts before that between Germany and, but then they contracted Russia to complete the job. So it's got three different types of construction materials on it. It's a 40-year-old nuclear reactor with a 30-year-old cooling system, and no one there equipped to handle a nuclear disaster like the one in Fukushima that happened when the tsunami hit that area. So it goes on to talk about this disaster that's going to hit this area because the Lord is going to cause that to happen as he destroys the leadership there because he's furious with the kings and the princes with Iran. And then it goes on and talks about that there'll be enemies at the time of Iran, and Iran has enemies presently, Israel, the Sunni Gulf states over there with Saudi Arabia and those countries. The international community is concerned with Iran. So it's a very descriptive prophecy. I'm not going to get a lot more into it other than to say there's a couple reasons God's furious with Iran right now. One of them we just talked about, they want to destroy Israel. But also the other one is the second part of the prophecy talks about a spiritual awakening in Iran. And you see that going on in Israel, right, in Iran right now. You see that through dreams, visions, miracles, and healings, several million people have come to the Lord. They're disenchanted with Islam, and they're having dreams or visions or healings, and they are receiving Christ, and they're being severely persecuted for that. They're being imprisoned. About 2 years ago, the Ayatollah came out and said, close down all home churches, imprison all pastors, and persecute all Christians. So this is another reason the Lord is furious with Iran as well. So I invite you to understand that something's about to give in Iran. The Lord's not happy with this nuclear deal that President Barack Obama's, you know, flailing in the air with great pride. Benjamin Netanyahu and the Lord, the God of the Bible, in my estimation, want that deal ripped up, and I think the Lord's going to take matters in his hands, and that's going to happen. So and that's one prophecy right there.
If I can, Bill, I'd like to just read this part of a commentary from the 1700s from Henry Morris in talking about breaking the bow of Elam. He says that their forces shall be disabled and rendered incapable of doing them any service. He goes on to say that, that behold, I will break the bow of Elam. This will ruin their artillery and the chief of their might. He says God often orders it so that which they trust in most often first fails them. It will prove to be the least of their help. The people will be dispersed, and they will be dispersed throughout the four corners of the earth. And that's exactly what you just stated in your breakdown.
That's what the prophecy says. And in my nuclear show, you know, so I talk about the prophecy in the Now Prophecies book, and I give a whole chapter to it. But if the listener wants the full detail and understanding of the prophecy, you know, why it hasn't been fulfilled, we look at the past of Iran, we look at the prophecy in depth in the Nuclear Showdown of Iran book, they can get all that research. But basically, this prophecy in all my research has not found fulfillment. Now, whenever a prophecy has not found fulfillment, we have to ask ourselves, when will it find fulfillment? And since we are in the end times, we've got different phases of end times prophecies that are coming. One is what could happen now. In other words, there's no significant conditions. It's as if we could wake up one morning and Iran's prophecy could be finding fulfillment with Elam's prophecy there. Then you have next prophecies that follow the now. In other words, when the now prophecies happen, they set the stage. They eliminate the preconditions that exist right now for the next prophecies to find fulfillment. And then after that, you have what are called the last prophecies. These are the ones that have significant preconditions. The stage has to be set. We have to go through the now stuff. We got to go through the next stuff, and then we're there. We're at the tribulation period. We've got 7 years left. The Antichrist is on the scene, and all the pre-tribulation prophecies now and next in order are out of the way, and the stage is entirely set. So that's why, from my perspective, Joe, when I talk about these prophecies, I'm interested in all of them. As a student of Bible prophecy and a teacher of Bible prophecy, you know, I need to know everything. But at the same token, what I want to know most, and is of most concern, is what could happen right now that would affect this generation, my family, my grandkids, my friends, etc. So that's why I'm harping on the now prophecies. These are the ones to be paying attention to right now. You can't just talk about them anymore. You need to start preparing for them because it could happen at the present time.
Absolutely. Okay, let's move on. Where to from here?
Well, then what's going to happen is another prophecy, in my estimation, and again, I'm going to caveat this. These may not happen in the order I'm going to say, but they're more than likely going to happen soon, and I think the details of the prophecies are very specific, and the conditions that once inhibited them from happening no longer inhibit them from happening. Now, let me give you an example of what I mean by that statement. When we just talked about Iran, and I'm going to talk about Damascus next in Syria, but when we talk about Iran, the preconditions for the Lord to be furious with Iran are out of the way now. The Lord is furious with Iran right now. But the Lord wasn't furious with Iran up until the Islamic takeover in 1979, and I'll give you an example. America was one of the first countries to favor the rebirth of the nation of Israel in the United Nations. We were one of the first ones with President Truman to approve it. The second nation to approve it was Iran. That was the time of the Shah. Now, the rebirth of the nation of Israel is a fulfillment of many Bible prophecies. In other words, it's part of God's plan. Anybody that's going to support that is not going to be, the Lord's not going to be furious with them. He's going to be quite pleased with them. So America was first and Iran was second. But my, how things have changed since 1979. Now you've got this Islamic regime that is trying to spread its crazy Sharia law throughout the Middle East and wipe Israel off the map and kill all the Christians. So we're in a situation right now where the Lord is furious with Iran, therefore that precondition is out of the way. So when we talk about prophecies that have no more preconditions, that's the now stuff. That's the stuff we need to be thinking about. So the next one. If Iran gets struck, and there's a pretty good chance, although the prophecy in Jeremiah 49 doesn't tell us precisely who strikes Iran, but it does sound like someone strikes them because it says, I will send the sword after them until they're consumed. Now, that generally references a military invasion. Iran will not just, you know, play possum here. They're going to retaliate. Iran's a powerful army. And who do they have? They've got proxies throughout the Middle East. They've got Hezbollah, who they've been arming with missiles to the teeth. Hezbollah is estimated to have about 150,000 missiles right now, and all of them are very powerful. Most of them are, and most of them can hit any target in Israel. And they've got a bank of targets they want to hit. Lately, they were talking about hitting the nuclear site, Dimona, and hitting chemical factories where they make ammonia and things like that, which would have a nuclear-type effect once they strike it. So they're clear on what they want to strike. Hezbollah is a proxy of Iran. Syria is a proxy of Iran. Iran is still fighting alongside Israel with Hezbollah, fighting along Syria with Hezbollah to keep the Bashar Assad regime in power. And so if Iran gets struck, you can pretty much count on Hezbollah to start throwing missiles into Israel. Syria will probably start throwing missiles into Israel. They've already threatened to do that if Israel continues to attack Syria, which Israel's struck Syria several times over the last few years because they don't want Hezbollah to get Iranian missiles. And you probably have Hamas get involved too because Hamas is also a proxy of Iran. So all of a sudden now you could have Israel engaged in a major war and Israel will lash out. And there's a prophecy in Isaiah 17 talks about the destruction of Damascus. It says in verse 1 that the burden against Damascus will cease to be a city, it will be a ruinous heap. Someday Damascus, the oldest continuously inhabited city in recorded history, the capital of Syria, will no longer exist. And we find out in Isaiah 17 verse 9 that the desolation is caused by the children of Israel. In other words, the Israeli Defense Forces. So therefore, since 1948 there's an Israel. Presently, in 2016, there's an Israeli Defense Forces. And they've already threatened to take out Damascus if Syria attacks Tel Aviv, which Syria has threatened to do in previous comments in the past. So we're looking at a reality here now. There's no preconditions here. There's an Israel, and there's an Israeli Defense Forces, and there's an animosity between Syria, which is capital is Damascus, and Israel. And then it says in verse 14 of Isaiah 17, the concluding verse, that one night you see Damascus, but in the morning it's no more. It says one night you see him, but in the morning he is no more. me speaking of Damascus and the masculine pronoun. So does that technology exist today? Could that be an Al prophecy? Yes, Israel can take out a city in one day. They can take out a city overnight. They've got the technologies to do it. So that prophecy has no more conditions. The animosity is there. The Israeli Defense Forces exist. The ability to take out a city overnight. Therefore, that prophecy could happen at the present time.
Yeah, and the, you know, the destruction of Damascus, Isaiah 17, the burden of Damascus, where in the text it says, the burden of Damascus, behold, Damascus is taken away from being a city, it shall be a ruinous heap. Many argue that it is turned into a ruinous heap, but you don't think that this is yet the fulfillment of this specific prophecy yet. You say that what the scriptures say, that it will be a more, it'll happen overnight.
Right. Well, right now Damascus is in a really bad state of shambles. As a matter of fact, Damascus is the second most populated city in Syria. Aleppo is number one. All of them are basically under sorts of sieges with what's going on in the wars, the revolution. Homs is the number three city, and Hama, I think, is the number four. You know, Homs right now is pretty much gone. I mean, it's desolated. Damascus is in trouble, but Homs is almost gone. I mean, it looks like Berlin after the bombs were killing it in World War II. But the prophecy doesn't say there'll be desolation because of the children of ISIS or of, you know, anybody else. It says that there'll be desolation because of the children of Israel. And in verse 14, when it says it happens overnight, it says, this is the portion of those who rob us and those who plunder us. So in other words, in self-defense, because Israel is being robbed and plundered by Syria, they're going to take them out overnight. And that's how I would interpret that prophecy. Now, I invite your listeners to open their Bibles and get their commentaries, and they can read what they want to read and come up with their conclusions. Dr. Mark Hitchcock, very wonderful guy, good teacher, he believes this prophecy was fulfilled in 732 B.C. by the Assyrian Empire, but I've got all kinds of reasons I have a problem with that. Isaiah talks about Assyria or Assyrians over 41 times in his 66 verses. Doesn't mention them once in Isaiah 17, but he does tell us the desolation is caused by the children of Israel. So just because Damascus is kind of coming down brick by brick right now, it does not mean that prophecy is found fulfillment yet, because it seems to be the children of Israel that will be the perpetrator. Now, what on the other side, though, what's happened in Damascus? Well, a lot of the people that aren't really, you know, I mean, a lot of the bad people are in Damascus now, the fighters, the terrorists, and all that sort of stuff, and a lot of the, if you want to call them good people, have left because they had to. I mean, I don't want to say good necessarily, you know, I'm not trying to judge who's good and evil in Islam and all this stuff, but there's a lot of the civilians who have left because they've had to. And a lot of those civilians who have left have become Christians, because in the Syrian refugee camps, they are hearing the gospel, which they probably would not have heard, normally speaking, inside of Syria, inside of Damascus. And they're kind of out of harm's way should Damascus get nuked out. Now, nobody wants to be a refugee in a refugee camp, but if one morning they look over their shoulder and they see a mushroom cloud over their hometown, they're going to be glad they're not in there. So, you know, I mean, it's just, that's how I look at that prophecy, and I think it could happen real soon.
Absolutely. And, you know, the writing is definitely on the wall when it comes to Syria, specifically Damascus. Now, taken away from the main road we were on, Bashar al-Assad, do you see him maintaining his status as president, or do you see him being taken out like the other dictators that have been in the Middle East, like Saddam Hussein, Muammar Gaddafi, and other nations that have fell?
Well, two of the leaders who are still in place since the Arab Spring of 2011 through the current revolution that's been going on in Syria since that time, two of the leaders that are still in place are Bashar al-Assad and King Abdullah II of Jordan. Both of those guys could be gone pretty soon. King Abdullah II of Jordan is very concerned about his longevity because, and that's a whole other prophecy, a now prophecy and toppling of Jordan. and trembling and toppling of Jordan, I call it in the chapter. But Bashar al-Assad's another question. Basically Russia went in there. Now they pulled out for politically expedient reasons temporarily. But they went in there and propped up the Bashar al-Assad regime. They were there helping Iran and Hezbollah and Bashar al-Assad to stay in power. And the emphasis on what was going to be these peace talks that between all the parties of the Syrian revolution, and there's a whole bunch of different parties, it's not just two enemies fighting each other, was going to be that Bashar al-Assad was not going to be able to stay in power. They're going to find a new leader. But now these peace talks aren't going anywhere at this point in time. Things are worsening over there. It's hard to say whether he'll stay in power or not, but there's a pretty good chance he will stay in power. I just don't know. But regardless of whether he's in power or not, we do have prophecies dealing with Syria. One of them is the destruction of Damascus. Another one is their involvement in Psalm 83. They're involved in a coalition of 10 members in an ancient psalm that talks about an Arab confederacy, and inside of them is Assyria, which at the time it was written 3,000 years ago, comprised parts of Syria and parts of Iraq, northern Syria and northern Iraq. Later, all of Syria was taken over by the Assyrian Empire around 732 BC. So, basically they're in prophecies. So we say, okay, well, whoever's in charge, Bashar al-Assad, ISIS, who knows who's going to take over and rule that area. They're involved in biblical prophecies, and those prophecies are anti-Israel. And they come against Israel in Psalm 83 to destroy the nation of Israel, that the name of Israel can be remembered no more, along with an Arab confederacy of the countries that share common borders with Israel, inside of which have terrorist populations now. So basically, I don't know whether Bashar al-Assad will stay in power indefinitely or how much longer, but regardless, Syria is not going to have a turnabout and start blessing Israel and become Israel's friend. Israel comes to destroy it. Syria comes to destroy Israel in Bible prophecy. And they get taken up by the Israeli Defense Forces. Like it says, there's desolation caused by the children of Israel.
Very interesting. The Psalm 83, the final Arab-Israeli war. Is this a good place to get into this, Bill?
Well, that's one of the bigger now prophecies. All these prophecies are big deals. And, right now your listener might be going, well, okay, Iran's in the Middle East. Syria's in the Middle East. He's talking about a Psalm 83 war. Jordan's in the Middle East. The Arab countries with terrorist populations are all in the Middle East. And they could be saying, is dinner ready? Because what's this got to do with me? I live in America. Well, I'm telling you, listener, have your dinner. But the bottom line is this. End times Bible prophecies are globally impacting. They are not going to confine themselves to the Middle East. They will affect everyone throughout the world. They will affect America. And we have to be on the right side of God's plan. And God's plan is we need to be blessing Israel if we want to continue to be blessed as a country. And we are turning our backs on Israel right now. So Psalm 83 is one of the bigger deals. Destroying Iran, disaster in Iran, that's a big deal. Damascus going down, that is a huge deal, the oldest continuously inhabited city. The stuff that's going on in Syria right now with all the terrorism and the wars and the revolution, it's dominating a lot of the news. I mean, it's affecting people, and ultimately when these things start to happen, they will affect us actually physically as well with our economies and things like that. But Psalm 83 is bigger. Psalm 83 is a final attempt by a confederacy which would include Lebanon, and of course you got Hezbollah up there, Syria, Iraq, you got ISIS in there, Jordan, Egypt, we believe Egypt could be in this prophecy, Saudi Arabia, the Hamas over there in ancient Philistia, the Palestinians are actually one of the lead members, Tents of Edom it's called in the prophecy. You've got all these terrorist populations all inside of there now. And they're going to come against Israel collectively with the mindset that they want to destroy the nation of Israel, that the name of Israel could be remembered no more. And the reason for that, it says in Psalm 83, verse 12, they want to take possession of the pastures of God. In other words, they want another state of Palestine if it's for our time, and I believe it is. We've seen them as collectively as a group come against Israel in various wars. But it wasn't the conclusion of the prophecy when you understand the details of the prophecy. However, that could find its final fulfillment very soon. And once that happens, then Israel can dwell securely without walls, bars, nor gates. They could be expand territorially. They're not no longer worried about the threats of the Arab neighbors around them who don't even recognize their right to exist as a Jewish state. And that type of Israel is the Israel that we seem to see pictured in Ezekiel 38, which I talked about in the first hour, which is when Russia comes against Israel with its consortia of Ezekiel 38 enemies, Iran, Turkey, Libya, etc., because Israel is dwelling securely in the midst of the land without walls, bars, nor gates, which they cannot do right now. You know, most Israelis right now, they're building fences even today, walls around southern parts of Israel and stuff like that. Most Israelis have gas masks. Most Israelis know where their nearest bomb shelter is, and they've got 15 seconds to 3 minutes tops, depending on where they live, to get to that bomb shelter. Israelis have seen thousands of missiles thrown at them through Hamas. Police cars drive around in Jerusalem with their lights going to let the people know that there's police protection nearby. Now, if we see police cars driving around in our city with their lights on, we think someone's perpetrating a crime and we're trying to duck and cover and get out of the way. That's actually a security mechanism over there in Israel. So I just say that to let you know, some people believe Israel is already dwelling securely and Ezekiel 38 could happen now. I just don't agree with that.
Okay. And America and all this, you know, we're talking about a time where Israel will be able to dwell safely in the land after a few of these now prophecies have come to fruition. They feel safe. And we have America. We have the decline of America. And you also have, at the very end of your book, the last chapter, chapter 17, preparing spiritually for the now prophecies. As well, in the fifth chapter, spiritual showdowns are happening now.
Yeah, and there's so much in the book, it's so hard to cover it all in the show, but we should talk about America in this remaining, you know, 20, 30 minutes that we've got together here.
Well, let's do that. Let's talk about the political state, and then we just spend a few brief minutes on that, and then flip to the spiritual side. We see, you know, what's going on with the GOP, the Donald Trump anti-establishment presidential frontrunner, versus the same party he's running in, the Republican Party, the GOP establishment, trying to push him out and take the nomination away from him. We know that there's no political solution to a spiritual problem, and we know we have a spiritual problem here in America. But for the political side of this, do you see a potential for civil conflict? We know the racial war and tensions have been heating up here in America. Do you see, if the nomination is taken away from Donald Trump or some other event happens, the potential for a conflict within America, for us to neuter ourselves from being a geopolitical powerhouse?
Yes, unfortunately, Joe, I do. And whether it's an internal civil conflict or whatever the case may be, a nation that is under judgment / leading toward destruction, and we've seen this happen through nations and empires in the past, when they've done what we've done to God, kicked them as far away as we have, we've seen their demise. And so whether or not that's civil unrest or financial collapse or, you know, solar flares that wipe out the electronic grids, I don't know. But when I know this, when the Lord wants to take out a country, he's got it'll happen. And it may be ways we can't even imagine. We saw what happened with Egypt 3,500 years ago with the plagues. Out of nowhere, these things came and just took the country, pretty much just took the number one country in the world and just shocked it. And almost eliminated it. It certainly took out its armies and its pharaoh, etc. So, yeah, I'm concerned. I'm really concerned because this is where, you know, all of our families and all of our stuff is, right? Not that we're materialistically speaking, but, you know, this is the heart of the matter that's near and dear to your audience that are listening. I imagine most of them are national audience. So, anything could happen. And there's this big emphasis on this presidential election. And rightfully so. But the point is, what we have to ask ourselves is, do we as a country have a repentance coming, a revival of sorts, or something where we could have a repeat of the historic episode, the biblical episode of Nineveh at the time of Jonah, when Nineveh was told by Jonah that you got 40 days until you're going to be destroyed. And Nineveh took that, the king of Nineveh took that to heart, and he issued a national proclamation, and he prayed, and then the Assyrian Empire, they prayed, in Nineveh, they prayed, and the Lord relented, at least for 100 years, ultimately it was destroyed, but it relented from that 40-day pledge to destroy, because they repented and got right with God. So we have to ask ourselves, is America about to do that? Because if we're not, there's some other things we really need to look at. There's other policies that are biblical policies that will affect a country that is not going to do that, and they're not good. Now, let me give you an example. One of the things about the Now Prophecies book is I try to make it easily understandable, reader-friendly. I format it in a way where pretty much anyone can read it and walk away with some very important information. And so, give you an example, I have three chapters devoted to America in this Now Prophecies book. And I open chapter 6 with a story about, we're having dinner, a friend of mine, Pastor Dave Barton and I, he's my son's father-in-law, and we're having dinner, and we have a 12-year-old boy having dinner with us who's a friend of Dave Barton's family. He's kind of watching him for the mom. And Dave Barton and I are going to go to see a movie after dinner. And this boy, his name's Brent, he goes, "Hey, Bill, where do you like to sit when you go to a movie?" And I said, "Well, Brent, I like to sit at the back of the theater because I don't want the screens to be too big for me, you know, so I can get a better look at the movie." And it was an innocent question. And then he said to me, "My dad and I always sit in the back." A little alarmingly, and the innocence of his question started to disappear. And I said, "Well, Brent, why is that?" He goes, "Because we don't want to get shot from behind." And, you know, I started talking to Dave Barton right then. I said, "Dave, you know, this would not have happened in our generation. There would be no 12-year-old worried about being shot from behind during the days of Donna Reed and Father Knows Best. I mean, people didn't even lock their houses back then. But this is a concern for the younger generation. You know, half of the millennials believe the chance for the American dream is already gone for them in a recent survey. So we have to ask ourselves, how far has this country fallen, and what evidences do we have? And if that's the case, are we in store for judgment / destruction? And that's what I cover into the book, and I can give you the reasons and more stories as to why Americans really, really need to get right with God and really need to be concerned about what the fate of this country.
If I could, Bill, something that's not in your book, as this is a newer developing story, we're hearing information that there are going to be, we saw what ISIS did to the Baal temple in Palmyra, Syria, but now we hear that the UN and UNESCO are going to create an implant in New York, in London, in LA, in hundreds of cities around the world, these new temples to Baal, the ancient Canaanite deity. What do you have to say about that? How worrisome are you about the direction of the... I mean, why would a country do this?
Well, at the risk of sounding a little bit ignorant, I'm not extremely familiar with that, you know, current news event that you're talking about there, or those plans. But I do know that would not bode well for any country or nation that does that. We're racing toward this marquee event we talked about in the first hour, where God's going to officially notify the world that he's God. You know, he's allowed the nations to run amok while the Jews were out in the nations of the world, and the nations all said, "Why should we pay attention to your God? He can't even keep you in your own homeland." And in essence, they were profaning the name of God because of their behavior out in the nations of the world. And so the nations pretty much decided to do whatever they want to do. And the reason God's got to make his holy name known again in the midst of his people Israel is because it's been vastly overlooked, vastly forgotten. And it's the name above all names to which all people must be saved. And God loves everybody and wants them to be saved. He's about to let the world know he's God. He's not going to overshadow Allah. He's gonna topple all the false gods. We're told in Zephaniah 2:10-11, a day is coming where the Lord will vanquish all gods, and everyone from all the nations will worship Him. And then, of course, that'll happen in the most millennial kingdom of Christ. But so we're coming to a point in time now where anybody that is going to stand in the way of God demonstrating He's God is going to be in trouble. And if you're going to start putting false gods up all over the place, they're destined to be toppled and destroyed, because God is now in the process of elevating Himself and dethroning everybody, every other false god. And He's going to do this before the Antichrist comes on the scene, in my estimation, because He wants the world to know He's God. And He doesn't want to do it after the Antichrist has already duped everybody with deception and got them buying into the Mark of the Beast campaign, through which it's guaranteed torment and the wrath of God to be poured on those people that take the Mark of the Beast. He's not going to slap his forehead after that point in time and say, oy vey, I wish I would let everybody know I was God before the Antichrist duped them. You know, so we're getting to a point now where God is about to show up and make a big deal about who He is. And that's a prophecy with all this detail that's about to happen. And the now prophecies are going to get taken care of and fulfilled, in my estimation, soon. And then that prophecy, the big deal, is going to just overtake the world. And then God's going to say, see, that earth, that supernatural defeat of the most massive coalition in history that no one could have imagined stopping, but me, I did it supernaturally, that's me, I'm God. That's the God of the Bible who did that and said He was going to do that over 2,600 years ago. It's going to happen exactly like He said it's going to happen, and it's coming soon.
Yeah, I agree with you there. And just so you are familiar, this story from InfoWars yesterday, it says a question, will a gateway be opened when the arch from the Temple of Baal is reconstructed in Times Square? Part of the Temple of Baal that stood in Palmyra, Syria, is to be reconstructed in Times Square and also in London. And their UNESCO and the UN is behind this, but they're setting up in cities across the world the entrance archway, or the arch entranceway to the Temple of Baal in Times Square in London and in many other cities across the world. And we all know Baal is the ancient God, Babylonian God, and it's just in-your-face evil, in my opinion. And, you know, we talk about a falling away in the church, the apostasy, but this is in the secular world. And I guess the question I have is just, why now? And that answer would have to be in the Bible. And what you said, these people are setting up, you know, the satanic elite are setting up their shrines and temples, trying to let the masses know who's in charge, who the God of this world is. But the Lord in heaven will be victorious, as He will crumble these, as He says He will, all of these idols and idolatrous places where these idols have been set up.
Yeah, we're heading for a real spiritual showdown, ultimately, yeah. You know, between God and Satan. Satan knows, according to 2 Thessalonians 2, there's going to come a time on the timeline where he's going to be unrestricted to deceive humanity through all signs and lying wonders. He knows that there's something restraining that right now, but when that restraint is commanded to depart, he's going to be able to come out with his program. And his program is at that point in time, he's not going to go, when the restraint's removed, he's not going to go, oh boy, what do we do now? We got a clean, free slate here to do whatever we want. No, he's already been planning this out for centuries. He's just waiting for the moment to come out and fool everybody and bring forward his lawless one, the Antichrist. And so he knows that moment has got to be coming really soon. He knows prophecies probably better than most anybody. I mean, he follows this stuff. And he knows the now prophecies, trust me. And he knows how important Israel is, even though the church doesn't get it predominantly. So, you know, when you start seeing E.T. deception, Mary apparitions with the Catholic Church, false gods with Baal coming up all over the place, a lot of the media industry focusing all the, even the cartoons and stuff on the, you know, aliens and all this stuff, you know, I'm not saying I know what is specifically his plan of deception is going to be, but all of these things that lead you astray into thinking that there's another truth to be known besides the God of the Bible, Jesus Christ, I am the way, the truth, and the life, he says in John 14:6. All those things that are counter to that, you're probably going to see more and more of that stuff starting to position itself, because Satan knows that hour, that time is getting really close. And the minute he can come out with his full show and the restraint's gone, he's going to do it. It's going to happen instantly. So, you know, I'm not surprised to hear that this stuff's going on, and that's why God's going to make his showdown real soon. I'm God. A bunch of stuff's going to be coming your way. This is kind of how I would paraphrase it, you know. He's going to show he's God, and all the stuff that's going to be coming, and people have to choose between that and him. And ultimately, it's going to narrow down to two choices. You know, there's going to be Christ or the Antichrist. After the rapture of the church, which I believe is a now prophecy, when Jesus comes to take his bride, could happen at any given moment. I call it the vanishing of the Christians in the book. After that, the world will start to realize, hey, we didn't evolve. People are not going to be asking if there is a God. They're going to be having to choose between them. And it will narrow it down to four religions at that time. One will be, there'll still be Christianity going on, but most of those people will be getting killed. Then there'll be Judaism, because the Jews are going to want to build their temple. And especially after Ezekiel 38, they're going to be feeling more propelled to do that and compelled to do that. You're going to have a harlot world religion initially in Revelation 17, mankind's first jeopardy of the double jeopardy of religion in the end times. Then when the harlot world religion overextends its usefulness, it will be destroyed by the 10 kings in Revelation 17:16, at which point the Antichrist comes on the scene. So ultimately, the Judaism will go away as the Antichrist tries to commit genocide. The harlot world religion will be decimated, and you're going to have Christ and Antichrist as the whole showdown at the end. And nobody's going to be wondering when all the lying signs and wonders are going on and all the supernatural stuff's happening, gee, I wonder if there's a God. No, it's going to come to a point where everything gets real spiritual, and I think that point is coming real soon.
We have about 8 minutes left in this hour, Bill, and if we could, I want to jump to page 57 of your book, Identifying a Lesser America in Bible Prophecy. Could you touch on this a little bit?
Yeah, the Lesser American Bible Prophecy, I believe we find ourselves in Ezekiel 38:13. We talked about this earlier, where we are with the merchants of Tarshish and their young lions. There's these four protesters that are not fighting against Israel, they're not fighting with Israel, but they're enlisted in the prophecy. And mainly all they're doing, seem to be doing, is protesting and echoing their concerns that why are you coming to invade Israel, Russia, with your bands? And basically you have Sheba, Dedan, the merchants of Tarshish, and their young lions. Sheba would be, we believe, Yemen and maybe some of the Gulf Arab states. Dedan would be Saudi Arabia. There's good arguments for why the merchants of Tarshish would be the UK, and the young lions that came out from them would include America. Inside of the book, I devote a whole chapter to is America in Ezekiel 38. It's one of those three chapters about America. So inside of the book, Now Prophecy's book, I present the archaeological, the biblical, the geopolitical assortment of reasons why we are a lesser nation and why we need to be concerned. America has crossed every dangerous biblical boundary when we look historically in the past that has caused the demise or the destruction of an empire. We've crossed the sexual perversion boundaries. You know, Sodom and Gomorrah was destroyed in 2000 BC. Idol worship, which led to child sacrifice by the northern kingdom of Israel, they were destroyed in 722 BC by the kingdom of Assyria. Wickedness and moral decadence, which was characterized the Assyrian Empire, they were destroyed in 612 BC. Anti-Semitism, which caused Pharaoh and his armies their lives 3,500 years ago, coming against Israel. I point out all the legal Supreme Court cases that we talk about where we kick God out of the schools and prayer and Bible reading in the 1960s, and we legalized abortions in the 1970s, and then go through a whole list of things to ultimately to where we get a point right now where the Supreme Court in June 26th of 2015 approved same-sex marriage. You know, ultimately it gets to the final straw, and that's where we're at right now as a country. And so if we're at that stage right now as a country, are we going to turn it around? Are we going to have a Nineveh moment? Because if we're not, then your listeners need to be prepared for two things. Jeremiah 7:16, and Hosea 4:6. And I'm going to read those verses as we start to close out. Jeremiah 7:16 says this, and let me preface it real quickly. At the time Jeremiah wrote this, the southern kingdom of Judah was idol worshiping and disobeying God, and they were not going to have a Nineveh moment. They were not going to repent like Assyria did with the king of Nineveh at the time of Jonah. And so what God said to Jeremiah, he said this, "Therefore do not pray for this people, nor lift up a cry or prayer for them, nor make intercession to me, for I will not hear you. Do not see what they do in the cities of Judah and the streets of Jerusalem." This is scathing. This is the Lord saying to Jeremiah on behalf of the southern kingdom of Judah, don't even pray for them to change anymore. They're not gonna. The Lord knew they would not change. He knows the end from the beginning. So he said to Jeremiah, don't waste your time praying for them. And then what happened is he told Jeremiah, you start getting them ready to go into Babylonian captivity for 70 years. That you start doing, Jeremiah. So that became their now prophecy in Jeremiah chapter 25. Get ready to go into captivity. Pay attention. The Lord doesn't even want me to pray for you anymore. That is a dangerous situation. Is America at that threshold? Because if we are, then you got to start thinking about Hosea 4:6. Now Hosea, about a century prior, was prophesying to the northern kingdom along with Isaiah and Amos and some other prophets. The northern kingdom of Israel, who was destroyed in 722 BC by the Assyrians. And Hosea was saying to them, because they had their whole problems with what was going on too, child sacrifice and things like that. Hosea said to them, I'm just going to speak to all of you in the land of the northern kingdom. I'm talking to every one of you, whether you believe in God or not. He says in Hosea 4, toward the end of it, he says, those who lack understanding will be trampled. But then he says in Hosea 4:6, my people perish, my people are destroyed for lack of knowledge. So here's what we have to think about in this country right now. If we are not going to have a repentant moment where we invite God back into our country, and we're not going to have an end of a moment, and we continue to pray for this country, and at some point the Lord says, I've got deaf ears now because this country's not going to turn it around. I'm not saying we're there, but I'm saying I'm concerned we're getting close if we're not there already. Then we have to start thinking, okay, the people of God who have faith need to know what's about to happen. They need to know that this country's going to experience judgment, and they don't want to perish because they're not aware of that. So in other words, in Hosea's time, the memo was given, the message was given, the people had the information the northern kingdom was going to be destroyed, and if they did not take heed to that information, they would perish for lack of knowledge. Not that the knowledge wasn't available to them, but the knowledge was not being applied by them or used by them. So this is my concern right now. If we're near that, then now is the time to get people prepared because they don't want to perish for lack of knowledge. And the knowledge they need to be preparing for is the prophecies that could affect them at the present time.
Wow. A whole lot there that you said, Bill. That's so very important. We're coming up on the end of the hour, and we can let you go, and we can have you back on soon. Where are you going to be at? Any radio shows, upcoming conferences, appearances that you want to let people know where they can find you?
Yes, we've got a couple big conferences coming up in June with Prophecy in the News, and you can go to prophecyinthenews.com and get information on that. There'll be like 20 speakers there. That's between June something, Father's Day weekend. I think it's 15th through the 17th. And then the month following, and that's in Pikes Peak, Colorado, we got another one in Pikes Peak, Colorado with Prophecy Watchers with Gary Stearman. Now, that one is sold out, but they have live streaming available. You can go to prophecywatchers.com on that one. Meanwhile, I've got radio shows and TV shows coming up that I'm doing. We try to keep those posted at prophecydepot.com under upcoming events.
Yeah, very bottom of the page, everybody. prophecydepotministries.net at the very bottom of the page, upcoming events. You can find
and you can also get there with prophecydepot.com also.
Okay.
It points to the same thing. And yes, I'll be in Oklahoma City teaching at the Chisholm Creek Baptist Church. My next speaking engagement is on Oklahoma City on the 20th of this month.
Wow.
In case you're in Oklahoma City, love to see you. That's on my website also.
Bill, it's been great having you on. Again, Bill's new book, The Now Prophecies. Go to his website, prophecydepotministries.net, prophecydepot.com. Get his book and DVD. Thank you so much for joining us tonight, Bill. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks, Joe, for having me.
Look forward to having you again, and you be safe in your travels, and God bless you, and thank you very much. Folks, we'll be right back after these short messages. Stay with us for our third and final hour.
This is the Global Star Radio Network.